order.
With Prime Minister John Key in New York to chair a special UN Security Council debate as part of the New Zealand initiative to end the five-year conflict in Syria, Parliament celebrated the International Day of Peace on Wednesday by passing this motion from Labour's spokesman for disarmament, David Cunliffe.
Mr. Speaker, I move that this House recognise and celebrate the International Day of Peace by acknowledging and working collectively to address the serious threats the international community faces in progress towards peace, including ongoing North Korean nuclear test, the appalling civil war in Syria, large-scale displacement of refugees, remodernisation of nuclear arsenals, and growing superpower tensions.
Mr. Cunliffe's motion was followed by this request from the Greens List MP, Catherine Delahunty.
I seek to move a motion without notice and without debate in support of the women's peace boat to Gaza, including NZ MP Marama Davidson, to show solidarity and support to the Palestinian people.
Before putting that request to members, the Speaker, David Carter, heard from the Leader of the House, Jerry Brownlee.
Mr. Speaker, I make the point that for some time now, we have generally had an arrangement where WIPS officers contacted one another to indicate whether or not there would be support for leave. It doesn't look good if members move motions of this nature that are then declined. But there will often be good reasons why a government can't support some motions. And I think, Mr. Speaker, it would be timely for all parties to agree that the arrangements they had previously accepted through the Business Committee are followed. Unless, of course, this week's breakdown of the Business Committee arrangements are to be permanent.
Without commenting on Mr. Brownlee's remark about a breakdown of arrangements in the Business Committee, which had last met the previous day, the Speaker agreed with his argument.
I think the points that Mr. Brownlee makes is the Business Committee is a very important institution for the working of this Parliament. We have at times discussed the need for more cooperation and collaboration between WIPS, whether that's happened or not on this occasion. The member has every right to seek leave to move a motion without notice and without debate. So I will put the leave. Is there any objection to that course of action being followed? There is none.
And there was no vote against the motion. So after expressing their desire for peace on earth, including Syria, MPs proceeded to declare war on each other in the general debate, with Māori Party co-leader Te Uruarua Flavel firing the opening salvo.
2 weeks ago, Mr. Speaker, all parties in this House agreed at the Business Committee that five settlement bills will be brought to this House this Friday. Hold on, yeah. So what? So what? They pulled the plug on it.
They being the New Zealand First Party. But the reason and timing of their decision to vote against specific parts of two of the settlement bills was overshadowed by the disappointment that decision had caused.
Over 400 people were coming to Wellington from the far north, coming from Taranaki, coming from Manawatu. Why? Because they wanted their day in the sun, Mr. Speaker. They've been waiting for Te Atiawa 30 years to come to this Parliament. I was there. I met the people. I know their pain.
Mr. Flavel's pain and disappointment were shared later in the debate by several National MPs, including Stephen Joyce.
This week we have seen New Zealand First show the most contempt for the people of regional New Zealand by getting them to book tickets to come to the city to celebrate their treaty settlements. And Winston Peters has given them, Mr. Speaker, what is known up my way as a two-fingered salute.
Among National MPs queuing up behind Stephen Joyce to inflict maximum damage on New Zealand First was their Hamilton East MP, David Bennett.
The people that would have come here on Friday, that have given years of their lives to see this, and that didn't actually happen because the New Zealand First Party deliberately destroyed that process. They deliberately destroyed it for their own gain.
And hard on the heels of David Bennett, National's Rangitata MP, Joe Goodhue.
About how much it cost those 400 people to book their flights, to book their accommodation, but no, they do not care. The outrage from the Māori Party is absolutely as it should be. On behalf behalf of the people who will be missing out.
But they needn't have missed out because, as the New Zealand First Party's deputy leader, Ron Mark, explained, National had the numbers to extend the sitting into Friday and pass the bills.
If these bills were so important to the National Party, they would have had their full muster of MPs and ministers in the House for Thursday and Friday. They would have moved extended hours as they had planned. They would have had the debate, had the vote, passed the bills. If they knew so many iwi were coming to attend those hearings, to attend the House, why did they not stick to their game plan and carry on? Well, we know why. Because the email trail proves it. They had all these leave applications and they wanted people to go off on leave. Well, that's not our issue. If the government finds the treaty settlement bill so important, then why isn't the entire government here to see them through and to join in the celebration with iwi?
Mr. Mark then read out the transcript of a phone conversation he had had with Gerry Brownlee.
Gerry Brownlee, that is. Hello, Ron. Ron Mark, that is. Gerry, how are you, man? Gerry Brownlee, good. Ron, I needed to call you immediately. We've just adjourned briefly from caucus. We've had a long discussion on two of those iwi bills, Taranaki iwi claim settlement and Ngāti Kahu ki Whangaroa. We are going to oppose both of those, Gerry. Gerry, thanks, Ron. And he hung up. No mention in my telephone at all of that statement that we withdrew our voice vote only proposal. Nothing, nick, nick, zipper, nada. That is a total untruth.
Ron Mark then issued the government with a challenge.
Declare urgency now. Declare extended hours now. Put those bills on the table Friday. We, New Zealand First, will be here in full muster. We don't care if all you guys are taking an early break and you've got your kids pulled out of school so you can start your holiday early. We don't care. We'll be here. We will cast our votes against the two bills we said we would, and we will give you a voice vote, the government, a voice vote on the other three, as I said we would in that telephone conversation. This is a disaster and a debacle of Gerry Brownlee's making. This is not our making. This is a debacle of the government's own making. This is an indication of their incompetence, their stupidity, and actually their disrespect to Māori, because they never had any intention of sitting here on Friday and seeing those bills through as a government in support of those iwi who they now claim they mourn for. Right. Give me a break, you most sincere, pathetic government. I just have no time for you, and nor does New Zealand First.
Adding to Ron Mark's insights into what goes on behind the scenes in this parliament, his leader, Winston Peters, quoted from a letter. He said that National's chief whip, Tim McIndoe, had written to his colleagues on the business committee.
I imagine you are all receiving a large number of requests from your colleagues for leave on Friday, 23rd September, as I have been from mine. He asked whether or not there can be a reduction in the percentages and vote on the voice only. My colleague the next day sends a note and says, "Hi all, New Zealand First does not support this request for extra leave applications. It is all there." He's now caught out by his own words.
Mr. Peters claimed that National's whip had allowed too many of his own party's MPs to make an early start on this two-week adjournment, which coincides with the school holidays. And that was the real reason that the treaty settlement bills could not be passed this week.
The reason why we're not having it tomorrow is that he's given too much leave for his colleagues to be going on an early holiday. That's simple.
Winston Peters was speaking on Thursday morning when debate on the intermediate stages of the treaty settlement bills resumed and extra sitting time agreed in the business committee. The government did get four bills passed this week, three of them dealing with electronic monitoring of offenders. Wednesday was a members' day, and the government lost more than an hour of chamber time on Tuesday when the Speaker accepted Labor's request for an urgent debate on the Ministry of Primary Industries handling of illegal fish dumping.
I have received a letter from the Honourable David Parker seeking to debate Understanding Order 389, the release of Michael Herron's QC's independent review into the Ministry of Primary Industries handling of the illegal dumping of fish. This is a matter of recent occurrence involving ministerial responsibility. Earlier this year, I declined an application to debate the launch of this inquiry because at that time it did not warrant setting aside the business of the House. However, the inquiry has now concluded and the government has accepted its findings. Commercial fishing makes a significant contribution to the New Zealand economy. Its continued success requires effective management of the quota system and effective compliance activity. The Heron report goes to the very integrity of New Zealand's fisheries management. This issue is of significant importance to warrant setting aside the usual business of the House. I therefore call on the Honourable David Parker to move that the House take note of a matter of urgent public business.
Mr. Speaker,
the Honourable David Parker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On the 16th of May, the University of British Columbia, in concert with the University of Auckland, released a report on the fish returns in New Zealand, saying that the only way that the New Zealand fish landing records could be correct is if somehow New Zealand fish, unlike the rest of the world, miraculously sort themselves into good fish and less valuable fish, and all the good fish line up and go into the net, and all of the low-value species and all of the specimens that are below good commercial value and all of those that are too big, somehow they escape the net and they're never reported. That's essentially what the report said on the 16th of May. They said that the New Zealand returns are wrong, that New Zealand grossly, not just by some marginal amount, but grossly under-records the amount of fish that is caught in the quota management system. Sir, what was the immediate response of the ministry? The ministry said, no, there's nothing to look at here.
As well as making the application for that urgent debate, Labor's Shadow Attorney-General had earlier put this question to Mr. Guy.
Does he agree with the ministry's Deputy Director-General, who said in May, quotes, "To be honest, we're disappointed that we didn't have enough evidence to do the prosecution. If so, how can he have confidence in his department when the Heron report states the investigator and the compliance personnel were correct to determine that there was sufficient evidence to prosecute and that it was senior managers that overruled it?"
The Honourable Nathan Guy.
Mr. Speaker, if you read the Heron report, it does say that a flawed process was followed, that there was unclear communications back to the fishers, and there was unclear communication between the fisheries management team and the compliance team. And that, unfortunately, is regrettable. And as a result, the Director General has said there's going to be changes made within MPI, and I support those.
The Minister for Primary Industries, Nathan Guy, who was himself the subject of questions on Tuesday, when the main dish on the House menu was fish, fish, and yet more fish. It began with the first question of the day about the government's proposed marine sanctuary around the Kermadecs. Standing in for the Prime Minister, his deputy, Bill English, faced this question from Māori Party co-leader Marama Fox.
Does he agree with the Māori Party that it is possible to achieve both a sanctuary and to protect property rights that have already been secured in the Fisheries Settlement Act 1992?
The Acting Prime Minister.
Well, Mr. Speaker, we don't always agree with the Māori Party. In this case, I'd hope that we can get to a position where the sanctuary can be achieved and everyone's happy about it.
But nobody, least of all the Minister for Primary Industries, Nathan Guy, was happy with the findings in the report from Michael Heron QC, which was critical of the failure by the Ministry of Primary Industries, or MPI, to prosecute a case of illegal fish dumping, the subject of this question from Mr. English from Opposition Leader Andrew Little.
Why does he have confidence in the Minister for Primary Industries when his regulations to stop fish dumping have, by his own admission, failed and thousands of tonnes of fish have been wasted?
The Acting Prime Minister.
Well, Mr. Speaker, on behalf of the Prime Minister, does have confidence in the Minister for Primary Industries. The issues that have been raised are long-standing and challenging issues, and this Minister has got stuck into resolving those issues in a way that is fully transparent and we believe will be effective.
Assured of his Prime Minister's confidence in him, Nathan Guy then himself faced questions, including this one from the Greens spokeswoman on primary industries, Eugenie Sage.
How can the public have any confidence that cameras and video monitoring will help when MPI had extensive video footage of fish dumping in Operation Achilles and senior managers blocked prosecution based on that video footage?
Order. The Mr. Honourable Nathan Guy.
Mr. Speaker, as QC Heron states, MPI's prosecution processes are generally robust with high quality and experienced people. However, a flawed process was followed. It wasn't well documented. That led MPI to decide not to prosecute in the case of Achilles, and I find that very disappointing.
And Mr. Guy promised improvements in surveillance and policing, but that wasn't enough for Eugenie Sage.
The industry is getting away with it, and all the minister can say is that it should pull its socks up. When you've got an industry which stands to make major profits by dumping fish that are too small to get a good price in the market, they will continue to dump fish. It won't be until the ministry takes action, and under this minister, they are failing to do that. Mr. Speaker, we need the public to be confident that we have an independent regulator, not one that's captured by industry. That's why we need a full commission of inquiry, an independent and robust review into the quota management system, not just the minister's pulse check, which is the equivalent of a slap over the hand with a wet bus ticket.
That was in the debating chamber. For the week in the committee rooms now, here's Rhys Lyon.
On Thursday, the Foreign Affairs, Defence and Trade Committee met in the afternoon for consideration of the Paris Agreement on climate change. The international agreement was finalised last December, following negotiations between representatives of 195 countries, with New Zealand committing to reducing its greenhouse gas emissions to 30% below 2005 levels by 2030. The government says it plans to ratify the treaty by the end of the year and has in the meantime left it up to the Foreign Affairs, Defence and Trade Committee to hear submissions on it.
Generation Zero is a nationwide youth organisation with a mission of advancing New Zealand towards a zero carbon future. James and I have both actually had the privilege of being in Paris last year for COP21 when the Paris Agreement was formed.
Ms McLaren said Generation Zero supported ratification of the treaty.
Internationally, we're seeing a steady increase in the number of countries ratifying, and we think it's in New Zealand's best interest to do so as well. However, we believe that if New Zealand is serious about ratification, then we need to have a well thought out implementation strategy, and our proposed Zero Carbon Act is the ideal framework to provide structure for this. We are drafting the Zero Carbon Act based on the UK's 2008 Climate Change Act.
Ms McLaren's colleague, James Young-Drew, said that act being drafted by Generation Zero was in line with expectations of the Paris Agreement.
The Paris requirement to undertake adaptation planning will align with the Zero Carbon Act requirement to prepare and regularly report on a comprehensive adaptation plan to ensure New Zealand communities are kept safe from the effects of climate change.
Generation Zero's James Young-Drew with that submission on the Paris Agreement on climate change. Meanwhile, a day earlier, the chairman of the Foreign Affairs, Defence and Trade Committee, Mark Mitchell, appeared before the Social Services Committee as he presented it with a members' bill in his name. Mr Mitchell told the committee his stopping benefit payments for offenders who repeatedly failed to comply with community sentences bill aimed to do exactly as its title suggests.
If you don't actually live up to your part of the deal, if you don't engage in that responsibility that you have, then another pathway, another tool that we have to try and actually develop that sense of responsibility in you is to remove part or all of your benefit.
National's Mark Mitchell, and public submissions on that bill close next week. Also on Wednesday, the Government Administration Committee heard submissions on a bill completely overhauling laws governing the New Zealand Fire Service and heard from Professional Firefighters Union member Derek Best, who supported the aim of the bill but said it went too far.
Unfortunately, what I think's happened is what is a very simple three-step process to make progress. Somebody's decided to make dozens of other changes. I've managed to invent problems that don't exist and then provide solutions for them that won't work. They've actually taken things that work really well at the moment and decided to break them and do them differently. And it leads to what is really a seriously deficient and flawed piece of legislation.
Among Mr. Best's concerns with the bill were changes to the governance of the New Zealand Fire Service, which he suggested would result in bureaucratic interference in on-the-ground operations.
I have no idea how that's going to work. I mean, this is just so vague for a frontline key emergency service. What we're left with here is just very, very concerning, given that we're really trying to solve some very simple problems at the outset, which have been solved, but talk about using a sledgehammer to crack a nut, really.
Professional Firefighters Union member Derek Best with that submission on the Fire and Emergency New Zealand bill, which is due to be reported back to the House by January the 5th. In total, there were 18 committee meetings held during the week.
That report from Riesline. Back in the chamber, Kevin Haig, a Green List MP for just under 8 years, delivered his valedictory speech on Tuesday, talking about his time in the House and one of his main roles as the Green spokesman on health.
I regret that successive ministers of health have preferred to adopt an adversarial approach to their portfolio. I believe that much more could have been achieved by working together across the House on health. Economists seem to agree that funding for health services has dropped cumulatively and in real terms by almost $2 billion since 2008, while something like $20 billion has been spent on roads of national significance, for example. To me, that suggests that the priorities are entirely the wrong way around. It seems essential to me that government should seek to ensure that every person has the basics that will enable them to have a decent life. Enough good food, clean air and water, warmth and shelter, the means to good health and education, and a decent income. In this country, a growing number, far too many, do not have these basics, and worse, access to them is unfairly distributed. Remedying these problems should be the purpose of government. That's what government's for. The economy is not some force of nature. It is a collection of tools that we can re-engineer to help us meet those social goals. Instead, far too often, people are sacrificed in the interests of the economy, and that is fundamentally the wrong way around. The same is true of the environment. When the natural world is seen as a set of resources to service the economy, as raw materials or waste disposal, we know something is fundamentally wrong. Restoring and conserving a sustainable relationship with nature should be the other fundamental goal of government, which the economy should serve. Our country is run as if people and the environment need to serve the economy as inputs to the firm, and this needs to change entirely. When people are homeless because of land banking, when kids go hungry because wages and benefits don't even cover the basics, when they have avoidable health conditions that scar their entire lives because of poor quality, overcrowded housing, when landowners are still cutting down lowland forest, draining wetlands, and allowing their stock into rivers because there's money to be made, when the last Maui's dolphin plunge towards extinction because we prioritise the oil and fishing industries, something is fundamentally wrong, Mr. Speaker. When our very species is at grave risk because governments around the world refuse to take decisive action on climate change, lest it harm business, then we know that making people and the environment serve the economy has reached its logical end point of self-destruction. There are also areas where change is desperately needed, but where successive governments have taken no action because of what I believe is political timidity. There are others, but I want to single out drug law reform, adoption law reform that I've already mentioned, and assisted dying. These are all areas where the Members' Bill process is poorly suited to considered reform, and where a solid public mandate already exists for change. These are also areas where archaic law harms people in terrible ways every day. So I appeal to all parties, please be brave, stand for something. I want finally to give my thanks to those who have been on this journey with me. My friends, especially those in whose houses I've so often been a terrible guest, arriving late and leaving early, and those who've had to put up with me not being around for their important occasions. Thanks to my family, some of whom are able to be here tonight, and above all, thanks to my partner, Ian. In this house, our partners and families pay a great price in enabling us to do this work, and I extend my respect and thanks to all of yours. When I entered Parliament, I said that I wanted to dedicate my time here to the memory of my mum and my sister. I hope they would have been proud. I leave here now to take on another really exciting challenge. I know that those who come after me in the Greens will bring new skills, knowledge and energy that I couldn't have contributed. But in leaving, I feel that I have done my best. I feel I've made things better. And I go with my integrity intact. I wish you all the very best. Ka mutu e noho rā.
Green List MP Kevin Hay delivering his valedictory speech. His seat will be taken by the next name off the Greens list, Barry Coates. On Tuesday, the House passed this motion from the Acting Prime Minister, Bill English.
Mr Speaker, on behalf of the Right Honourable John Key, I seek leave to move a motion without notice congratulating the members of the 2016 New Zealand Paralympic team. I move that this House congratulate the team. On behalf of the government, I want to acknowledge all of the athletes, coaches and support staff, and to congratulate the athletes on their outstanding performance in Rio. Our Paralympians are an inspiration to New Zealanders. The athletes have all travelled many unique pathways in order to compete in this spectacular event. The years of dedication and hard work have paid off, not only for those who won medals, but for those who made their debut or achieved personal milestones. The Paralympic team won 9 gold medals, 5 silver and 7 bronze, a total medal haul of 21. New Zealand placed 13th on the medal table, our highest finish ever. In addition, New Zealand retains its title from the London 2012 Paralympics of number 1 in the per capita medal table.
Acting Prime Minister Bill English. Finally, here's the Deputy Leader of the House, Simon Bridges, with a quick look at what's up the government's sleeve when the House returns from this two-week adjournment.
When the House resumes on Tuesday, 11 October, the government will look to complete the committee stages of a number of bills on the order paper and the third reading of what was formerly the Judicature Modernisation Bill, presently on the order paper as items 24 to 46. Starting with the Senior Courts Bill.
Deputy Leader of the House, Simon Bridges. I'm Tom Frewin, and this program was brought to you with funding from Parliament.